Well, my name is Eric Elliott, and I'm with the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. And today is May the 18th, 1999. And I am told I'm in Salisbury, North Carolina, but I'm looking at the river. So I must be near Salisbury, North Carolina, at the home of Muriel Kaiser. And Ms. Kaiser, thank you for letting us come in today and ask you a few questions. This is an interview for the Women Veterans Historical Project with the university. The first question I've got is maybe the hardest. I hope it's the hardest for you. And that's simply, where were you born and where did you grow up?
Well, my father and mother were homesteading a ranch in Montana. And my father decided to enlist. And he thought it was his duty, and so he enlisted and was sent to New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And then my mother decided that she did not want to have me born there by herself.
Right.
So she went back to her mother's in New York State, which is upstate. And we stayed there, I guess, until maybe a year or two, something like that. And I was a premature baby and very delicate, didn't think I was going to make it. So as soon as she could travel, she went back to Montana and then to California. And so I partly grew up, or mostly grew up, I'd say, in the West. And my father was killed in France. And of course she couldn't do anything about the ranch, but we stayed with neighbors that were joined our ranch. And those were very happy days. So,
did you have brothers and sisters?
No, I was only
just child. You. So you got lots of good attention.
Yes, my mother never remarried.
And your maiden name was Kuykendall, is mm-hmm. that right?
That's a Dutch name that means that professor. Head of Davidson College was a cousin to this called Kuykendall. A Dutch name means keeper of the chicken, but they pronounce it Kuykendall.
Oh, okay.
I mean, she was called Kuykendall, but the people that know always, almost routinely said Kuykendall.
Kuykendall.
That's what he said, and it means keeper of the chicken. I'm the chicken. But she was...
Well, that means that she rules the roost.
But she had a lot of money. She went to school in the South and then in North Carolina.
Well, I was going to say, now, you grew up out West, and you were out on the ranch in Montana, and then you came back. Where'd you go to school? Mostly in Montana or a little bit?
Well, a little bit in a lot of places. I started school in Miles City, Montana, and then when it got cold, my mother took me to California because I couldn't stand the cold weather, and finished first grade there.
North Carolina.
And then I came back to New York State and went a while. And the cold winters were too much, so we went to Florida, and I went to high school partly down there. And then when it came time to go to college, we had driven down through North Carolina along the coast, and I decided I liked North Carolina, so we investigated Woman's College and Duke. Really, I thought I wanted to go to Duke,
right.
But they told me that if I wanted to be a teacher, that I should go to Greensboro. So
that's sort of what you had your heart set on.
So that's what I did.
Great. Yeah. So you were somebody who liked school, even though it seemed like you went to a lot of different places?
Yes, I love school.
Uh-huh. That's great. So you had no no inkling of friends or anybody else, word of mouth about WC, as it was, I guess, when you were there.
No, I don't
when
think
did you, when did you go in? 39?
30. I graduated
39. Right. Okay, trained 39. So you when you graduated, I guess, from high school, was it 11 years or 12 year high school in Florida?
12 years.
12 years. Because North Carolina was still 11 years.
Yes,
then.
Yes, I know.
So you were an older freshman then.
Yes.
Well, what do you remember about your, where were you staying in, what dormitory were you in when you were at WC?
Well, I was a day student for 3 years. My mother came down and stayed with me. We had an apartment on Walker Avenue. And
what was your mother's name?
Anna Mae McKee was her maiden name.
Sounds like it, you guys were just good friends, in addition to being mom and daughter. That's good. Do you have any favorite subjects when you were there? What do you remember about professors and subjects when you were at WC?
Well, I was going to say that my last year I stayed in a woman's dormitory.
Okay. For most folks, the question I ask is, was going away to school the first time you went away from home? But in your case, it seemed like you're all over the country for home, so I don't think moving to a new place is very traumatic for you, or am I wrong?
No, it wasn't, because I had been in Florida and in the South before, and so it wasn't. And I liked it so much, too.
And did you have to declare, I guess, as an education major when you first got there, or?
I don't know that I did. I probably did, but because I had planned to be a teacher. I knew when I got through I had to go to work, and that was the only thing you could get a job at.
You know, back then,
for girls,
women became nurses or teachers.
That's right.
Or stenographers.
That's
you
right.
Didn't have much choice.
That's right. Are there professors that stick out in your memory, some folks at the university?
Yes. I can think of their names. Right now, I can't.
Did you ever have Harriet Elliott for any classes?
No, I didn't.
Was she some of your folks?
No, she's not, although I've been asked that, but she was a dean of the school.
Yeah.
And ended up becoming
Bill Elliott of Bessemer City.
Oh, Bill's out in another branch family. My folks come through Union County, and then Anson County. But so you were an education undergrad major.
Major. Uh-huh.
And then you say the last year you lived in Woman's Dorm. Do you remember much about social life on campus? Now, I know present company is accepted, of course.
Oh, yes. We had wonderful dances every Saturday night. And the girls that had boyfriends would bring them to the dance, and then those that didn't have any would cut, you know. It was wonderful.
of course, that was...
Probably had to be in by 10 o'clock.
Well, did you?
Yeah. Oh, yes. We had to... Oh, I believe it was 11. I live Kansas anyway.
Well, I know that the dorm was built in that era. They have, of course, now you know it's a co-ed university up to 63. But the dorms, some of the dorms that were built at the time, I guess you were there, you could tell the distinct parlor areas that are down at the front, you know, gray dorm and all those of that section of campus. And I guess, were you one of the societies there, like the Cornelian or the...
Yes. I can't even tell you what that was now. Really, I didn't take any part in it, and it didn't mean that much to me. We didn't, really, they weren't very important at that time.
Right. So what did you end up doing after you got your degree? Well, let me ask you before you do that. Most folks in college, whatever age, 30s, 40s, 50s, they enjoy being teenagers and having fun. But, you know, when you're in school, there's a lot of things going on in the world. How do you remember being aware of what was going on in Europe with Hitler and things like that?
Yes, I think I did. I was a political science minor. Mm-hmm. And so I was interested in world things.
Do you remember, did the depression affect your family as much as it did others with moving around, or?
Well, in a way it did, in a way it didn't, because my mother didn't work, but she had her insurance from my father's death, and as well as pension. So I guess we had a little more than some people did at that time.
Well, what did you end up doing after you graduated?
I stayed here and taught school. I've been here ever since.
Where did you stay in Greensboro? Where did you get a job?
Well, I started out in Concord, or in Hartsel School in the county. Uh-huh. Lived in Concord. And then I wanted to get a place in the mountains or near the mountains. So I had Mr. Names escaped me.
Phillips,
yeah. Phillips told him that I'd like to get up there. And so he found me a job in North Wilkesboro. So I stayed there, I guess, 3 years, till the war started, I think. And then I went to Greensboro, and I taught, just from, say, September, August, till January, and stopped and went in the Red Cross. But I couldn't get in right away because I didn't weigh enough. They had restrictions, and so I went to Miami and just lay around on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And ate popcorn and
bananas
and milkshakes, and finally I gained a little, but not as much as they wanted. But anyway, I thought it was time to go back through Atlanta. I went back to, that was the headquarters. So I went to the office every day. I got a job, by the way.
Right.
I was out of money by then. And I got a job with the Red Cross campaign. Mm-hmm. And
In Atlanta.
Got off the bus, went to the headquarters. Before I got there, I got a newspaper and looked through the ads, see what I could find to do. And found that the Red Cross needed some people in the campaign headquarters. So I got off the bus, went to the headquarters. They gave me a job and said, "Do you have a place to stay?" And I said, "No." So they found me a place to stay even.
That's pretty good.
So I stayed there, I guess, a couple months till the campaign was over. And then I still wasn't in. I'd go by the office every day and get weighed and say, "Well, you know, I think I weigh enough." And they wanted me to weigh about 125. And I said, "If I weighed that much, I'd be rolling in the aisles." So when the Red Cross campaign was over, the Jewish campaign started. So I went and worked for them for just a few weeks. And by that time they decided they'd let me go. They let me go for training. So then I went to Washington and trained for, I don't know, 6 weeks, I guess,
mm-hmm.
like that. And they shipped me out right away.
Well, all right, now let me fill in some details before you get shipped out.
I take that back a little
bit. All right.
I forgot I went to Virginia, to Blackstone, for just about 2 weeks.
For some sort of course in Red Cross.
No, it was just for a little experience, because I had the course. But waiting for a ship, I guess.
Now, I have discovered through extensive research that you did go to England.
Yes, right.
This is from the Alumni magazine back in 1947.
He's got that picture I was trying to find.
But I want to ask a few things about how you get there, just so I know more fully how the thought process is going on. You were in, what were you teaching when you first started out? Were you teaching
Primary grades.
Primary grades, okay. And then when you go up to, you're in Concord or at Hartsville School for, what, about a semester or for a whole year?
A year.
Did your mama come down?
8 months. It was 8 months.
That's right, 8 months school.
Yeah.
Did your mom come down from Greensboro, or she stay up in Greensboro?
Well, she came down from New York State. She had gone back up with her mother.
Okay.
And she came down just for a visit.
Right.
And went back.
And then in North Wilkesboro, you were teaching primary grades again.
Mm-hmm.
And you were there probably from, I guess that's 40 to 43.
Yeah, let's see.
About 3 years. Were you there when Pearl Harbor Day happened?
No. No. There. You went over on D-Day.
I went over on D-Day.
I know, but were you in North Wilkesboro? Is that where, you remember where you were at Pearl Harbor Day?
Let's see. Where was I?
I think you were.
Mm-hmm.
You hadn't been.
You said you were teaching about 3 years in North Wilkesboro, and then you were just a short time
In Greensboro,
waiting to get into the Red Cross from about September of 43 to January 44, and that's when you headed south to Miami to gain some weight and then came back to Atlanta. That sound about right?
Well, D-Day was before that.
Right. D-Day was June of 44, which is about when
was it 44 or 43?
44.
Yeah, I guess I came back. That was in June. I must have been.
Well, you know, Pearl Harbor Day is the day that they bombed out Pearl Harbor. That was the day that everybody said, okay, I guess we're in the war now.
Yeah.
It was uncertain up to that time. Do you have any recollection of where you were when you heard about that?
It had to be either North Wilkesboro or Greensboro.
Right.
But I'm not sure which it was.
Right. When you were in Atlanta, you said you were working for their campaign. That was just their regular annual fundraising campaign,
uh-huh.
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then, United Jewish Appeal, was that the campaign you were with?
Mm-hmm.
Did and then you finally gained enough weight. They let you in. You go up to Washington. And then you were down at, you say, Blacksburg, Virginia?
Blacksburg.
Okay. Well, what made you choose, of all the different ways that you could have gotten involved, what made you choose the Red Cross over any of the other services or the other ways that women were joining in? You remember?
Well, I guess it just appealed to me for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I chose that. Maybe somebody else was going and
was Emily in it before you were?
I didn't know Emily was going, though.
Emily Pryor?
No, Emily McCoy. She lives in Charlotte now.
Right.
But
she was in school with Pryor. Emily, whatever her name was.
Emily Pryor.
She was Emily Harris back then.
Emily Harris, uh-huh.
Do you know a woman named Vera Jenkins? It would have been Vera Rackley, I guess, in your class.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to her Friday. She was class of 39. But she was a dietitian, so you probably wouldn't, it's a big school. Wouldn't have,
mm-hmm.
you wouldn't run into each other.
I probably knew of her at the time, but she was not a particular friend of
mine. When you signed up for the Red Cross, do you remember anything in particular that you wanted to do? Did they tell you a kind of job you were going to do, or it's basically, I'll help however you need help?
Well, it was more or less like USO,
mm-hmm.
and I guess they told us that. So, it it didn't really matter to me. It was
what,
just
what she is saying,
it was exciting, and I was out for the excitement.
Now that's the real answer.
She was in charge of the clubs and entertaining of the troops. Getting in, one of the people she got in there was Glenn Miller, and he. I'm not sure.
I didn't get him money.
Well, they sent him in, but you had charge of the party and so forth. And
was that something that you immediately stepped in? What was your first job after Blacksburg? You were just there for a couple of weeks, and then you were sent overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And you were sent over to run one of these clubs or to
mm-hmm.
assist it, or what were you?
What they call it, area
I was
club,
an assistant so. First. Mm-hmm.
What was your first post? As an assistant.
Boxstead, England.
That's in Anglia, East Anglia.
Okay.
Colchester, well, near Colchester.
And this was next to an Air Force base or an Army base?
It was on an Air Force base. I was with the fighter groups all the time
mm-hmm.
in England. And when I went to France, I was with a light bomber group.
And in Belgium? What were you?
Light bomber group. That was the 9th Air Force over there, and I was with the 8th Air Force in England.
She was in Belgium, not far from the Battle of the Bulge.
So you were you went over in about, it sounded like June of 44. Did you go over before the D-Day invasion or right after?
The very day.
The day of?
We set sail, the very day.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I guess it sounds like that every Air Force base had a Red Cross attachment with
they
it,
did.
Or a service club kind of attachment.
Service club.
I know. Talked with a woman who worked at a stateside service club down at Bragg, and she was transferred to a couple places, and hers was, I guess, it was where the enlisted men hung out. Is that what was it?
Yes. That's it was just it was, for enlisted.
Just for enlisted men. The officers' club was.
They had their own.
But this is a special thing. And you guys, now were your clubs over there like the one she was talking about, that maybe you had a recreation area downstairs and a library upstairs and kind of place?
We had nice and huts over there. No upstairs or downstairs.
No upstairs. You were kind of on the move.
She was on the move right in the thick of things.
Just nice and huts. And, of course, that was all on one floor.
All right.
One would be the kitchen, one... Now, in England, the kitchen was taken care of by an English staff because they had all kinds of rules and regulations.
Kitchen for the service club. You mean.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Rules and regulations from the government so that we didn't have any idea what
right.
they
you had to help the regulations they took care of. But it was only American servicemen at that base?
Yes.
Okay.
So an English girl who was secretary. For that purpose.
Where did you?
That's many times when we visited them.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you? How was? Were you assigned? I guess you had a CO who was regular military.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Was he a man? Or?
Well, he was Air Corps.
Air Corps. So you had an Air Corps corporal or who was the what was?
Her boss was the CO of the unit, wasn't he?
The whole...
The Silver Fox or whatever.
Well, we were not controlled by the Army.
Okay.
We were attached to it, but we had a Red Cross headquarters over there that sent you out and did all the booklet and so forth.
Did you have an official uniform over there?
Yes.
Looked like the Army uniform, with kind of Army green?
No, it was...
That's what she's going to get about.
Yeah, I've got one out.
Oh, great.
Of course, that's what I've got on in that picture.
Black and white, it's hard to tell what it is. It's dark. Yeah. Is it a blue?
No, it's more charcoal. We had blue shirts, light blue shirts and white shirts that went with them. And then
great.
We had summer uniforms. Those were wool uniforms. We had summer ones of seersucker,
right.
Which we didn't use much because it... It's so cold over there.
That's true. You don't realize until you get over there, they're like 45 degrees. The southern Italy is 45 degrees latitude. That's the same latitude as Vermont.
In the winter, there wasn't much heat. We burned bomb rings in these little round pot-bellied stoves. And, of course, that went out after all. It was cold in the morning.
How long were you in England before you moved over to France?
8 months.
8 months. I think you told me you were at Verdun in France? Or were you in
Paris?
No. Well, it was out in the country. Near Liège, Belgium, and... But when they sent me from England, I wanted to go to France. And so they wouldn't send me until... I guess maybe I didn't apply till after the worst of the war was somewhere else.
Right.
And it was very, very cold in France. Everybody that we got word from said, don't come over yet, come over yet, because it's so cold and we don't have any heat. And so I went over in April, and it's the day they left me there 3 weeks unassigned. I don't know why.
This would have been April of 45?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And the day we left, they finally assigned me to a place in Belgium. The girl and I took the Jeep up, rode a Jeep up, and it snowed.
Good gracious.
But I got to spend April in Paris. Most of April. And we drove up, didn't know exactly where we were going. And we kept watching the signs to see if the language changed, you know.
Right.
And finally it did. We said, we're quite right. And found out later we ended up with a bomber group or something up in Belgium, where we didn't intend to go, of course. And they said, well, they told us the directions then from there, and said, well, you're about 50 miles from the front line.
I think you better get the map straight.
So,
oh my.
I'm glad we paid attention to the language.
Well, that's the part of Belgium that's is that in the Flemish part of Belgium or the Liège, or is it the French there?
No, it's Flemish.
Okay. And then you were there till the time that you left the Red Cross in December of 45?
No, we moved around several times. Different outfits, and one place I had to build from scratch. And by the time we got the Nissen up and things going, they shipped us out again. So I never got to use it. But we went back to France near Liège. Or Namur is where I was staying at Namur, and stayed there a while. One place was real scary, I remember, because they had buried a lot of bombs in the woods, and the woods caught on fire. And off went the bombs.
Right.
Boom, boom, boom. But we soon left that place.
Really? Was this the enemy had buried bombs or the...
We had.
Okay, so... Didn't plan on it to get it on fire. Okay.
Didn't plan on that.
Well, tell me what a typical day was like for you doing that kind of work.
Well... say in England, we got up pretty early and checked out the English staff to see that the place was clean and the kitchen, see that everything was going right there. And then there were no GIs in the morning there. Occasionally one would come in the afternoon and go to the library. But most of our work was at night. So that we planned entertainment for them. Sometimes we planned trips during the day. And there were usually two of us on duty.
Did y'all work 7 day shifts? Did you take a rotating day off, or how did that work?
I think we worked every day. I think we had a day off. Right. I don't remember.
Yeah, I think most of the folks who were as close to the line as you, I think that was the case. That's why
yeah.
The war didn't take a vacation. I'm sorry.
You but now in France, we served a light lunch in England at night. And then in France, we just served coffee and donuts.
England was where you got to help schedule the entertainment, or book that has to come into for the...
We had lectures, sometimes we had lectures.
Did you, basically, were you told what was coming through, or did you have any choice in the matter of who you could book yourself?
We usually booked ourselves. There was no one to book anything. We did all that.
Except maybe Glenn Miller, he didn't have those things like that.
Well, that was in the hangar. It was not in the club. That was an army thing.
Yeah.
Officers, I guess, chose that.
When did he get there? Right after you? You must have been not too long after you were there, but I think his plane went down at the end of 44 or beginning of 40.
The time she saw him, got his autograph, and we think maybe he took off from there and got lost.
He
was right there after.
It was right after he was visited us.
Hmm. So your place was the last concert he gave then?
I think it was.
I think I read, didn't you read the paper recently where they found some diary of a pilot who unloaded his bombs over the channel, and I think he may have dropped it on Glenn Miller's plane,
yeah,
and that's what happened to him.
A lot of stuff comes up in retrospect.
To put it together. Well, there's so much going on at that time, it's hard to piece things together.
Of course, it's been so long to him left,
True. How did your mom think about you joining the military effort and going overseas?
Well, she didn't much like it, but I always had a mind of my own, so
I could say, if there's anything your mom probably taught you, it was to be independent, I think, by example, if nothing else. So, and I'm sure this experience only made you more so.
I guess it did.
You were... In France and then right there near Belgium, that's where you ended your service. You in December of 1945. Do you remember? I guess VE Day, which would have been right there in May. Do you remember what happened that day?
Yes, I was in London. I had gone to London for something, and. Was upstairs in this hotel, and I heard all this noise outside, and fellas were throwing bags of water out on the cars that went by.
It's the old water balloon stuff. Yeah, it's okay. So that was their way of celebrating.
Yeah.
And of course, London had suffered so much.
It really did.
She was buzz bombed in London. When you first got over there,
yeah.
You go down the six.
Yeah,
floors.
We tried to sightsee, and they took us to a shelter about 7 stories down, and that's where we slept. They gave us a blanket and a pillow. That's all we had, and these hard old
concrete.
And know, they were just the springs, you know, and cots is what it was, just cots with a spring. You had your blanket, your pillow, and that's it. We slept there, I guess, about a week before they sent us out on assignment. And but then afterwards, I got back to London a good bit. But we tried to sightsee. Now we're just young, you know, you know any better. And we try to sightsee, so we might never get back to London again. And so we just run around here, take a taxi there, and see all the things. And the buzz bombs would drop right behind us or something, you know, they just, like flies, they just drop all around.
Did you pay this taxi driver well or something? What kind of taxi driver's out driving it, that stuff?
Well, they're used to it over there. They've gotten used to it, but they didn't pay much attention.
Yeah.
But on the base, they had concrete block. They called them shelters. I don't know what good they were. They had no roof or anything over them, just a wall. And at night, when the buzz bombs would come over, I couldn't sleep. So I'd get up and go out and get in the shelter, you know, and watch them.
Yeah.
It was like fireworks. They were red, like red balls. You'd see them coming over. And then this little motor, they went pretty low, about treetop level. And so when the motor cut out, then you knew they were going to fall.
Right. So that's how they were appropriately named. You could hear the buzz.
Yeah.
And as long as you heard the buzz, they were going past you. But when you stopped hearing the buzz, then you were in trouble.
It was like a little red fire came out of the back of them. So you could see them going across the sky, and they went very slowly. They didn't go fast. And then you'd listen for the motor to cut out and start ducking if it was close.
Well, did you ever feel afraid?
Well, I was afraid at night.
At night.
I don't know why. The girl in charge of the station, of our club, she wouldn't even get up. She'd sleep right through it. I say, how in the world do you sleep through this? Well, she'd been over there about a year before. And to me, it was kind of new. I hadn't gotten used to it.
Right.
So.
When you moved from England to France, did they move everybody in your group, or did they just reassigned you?
Just individually.
And your assignments came from a central office in London, or from where was the central office that assigned you?
I expect London. I don't quite remember where they came from.
You mentioned Bud Miller. Were there some other famous folks that you got to meet?
No, I don't remember any.
Did you get to go to any USO shows, or did they bring any to you?
I think they did more to the Army, the Air Corps. We didn't have too many USOs.
We didn't have the great big bases that the Army had.
No, they were small bases.
They were all small, and everybody knew each other.
Well, now, you can confirm this for me. I had a woman who said, well, thing about the air, she was stationed at a base in, I guess, southern Italy. And she said that there was only a small number of women there working with her group in the Red Cross. But whenever they had half a dozen women, they said, time for a dance. Because they didn't know, you know, it was...
We had dances about every Saturday night. Yeah. And what we did was recruit women from the small town nearby. Right. They'd send out buses and, you know, the English were always out for a good time.
Yeah.
Especially during the war. And they just loved to come to the dances. So we'd send a bus out to the town and load it up and then take them back.
So this is something Red Cross did for the servicemen then. They went out and got the bus.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, we probably used an Army bus, I guess.
Okay.
An Army something.
No, she was considered
You know, she's not considered a veteran now. She was, had she been captured, she would have been, you would have been considered an officer.
A captain.
A captain.
Thank goodness I wasn't captured.
Right, well, now, did you tell me that you got a little booklet about that as well, that y'all might be, or?
Yeah, we had information like that.
Right. And so when that was given out, did you think, Mom, I hope you don't know about this. You may be right, Mom.
No, you know, fear didn't enter my mind too much.
Did, what made you, you ended your service in December of 45. Did you ever think about staying longer with the Red Cross, or was it just time for you to come on back home?
No, I think, I never considered.
Did anybody offer you the chance to stay and work longer with her?
No. You were just on your own after that.
Right, right. Do you remember, you told me about VE Day. Do you remember anything about VJ Day?
Let's see. I kind of mixed the two up.
Because the, you know, once the war was over in Europe, it wasn't, only in retrospect, was it just a few months till the end of the war in Japan, because everybody thought there was going to be an invasion of Japan just like they'd been in Europe.
I kind of think, I'm not quite sure on this, when the bombs blew up, it seemed like I was on that base when it happened. I believe I was.
Yeah.
Yes, nobody had any inkling the bombs were coming.
Were you at Boxton on VJ Day?
No, I was in France.
Yeah.
Listen, yeah. I remember wanting to go to South America after VJ Day, I guess it was. I had been given a job there teaching right before I entered the service, so I couldn't take it. And I wanted to hitch a ride to South America where the planes went that were going to Japan, I guess. They went there and then, the Army wouldn't let me do it. Something like that.
Right.
So I came out of, but I was really wanting to hitch a ride to South America, because before the war I was applying all the time to some place in South America. I had a double minor in Spanish and political science, and I wanted to go because that would have been another adventure.
That's right. Did you, are there some songs or movies that when you see or think about that take you back to that time?
Songs do.
Any particular?
Lily Marlene.
Mm-hmm.
Along those lines, may I interrupt and say, even before the war, she went to the University of Mexico on a bus or drive
on a bus
all the way down by herself to Mexico City.
Good gracious. Just to practice that Spanish.
Yeah.
And to go,
yo hablo un poquito.
She had Spanish American on her mind then. And I think she was sort of like the guy that was going to be in the
that's great.
Service. What was he in the State Department?
Well, that was later.
That was later after that. Okay.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, you went down there twice in the year to Mexico.
Yeah, I went to Mexico twice. Once,
she
two summers.
She getting on a bus by herself. A little old frail gal, you know.
Right.
But I want to interject one more time. I'll keep my mouth shut. We went to a reunion of the 8th Air Force, 10 years ago, down in Florida. And so many of the guys remembered her. And every one of them came up to see me and says, nothing happened to her. He says, she had too many brothers out
there. Well, people do get pretty protective about things. Yeah. That's great.
I believe every one of them came up to me.
That's great. That's great. Did you came back did you come back to North Carolina again after December?
I came back right before Christmas of 44, but it was almost 45.
What I've got here says you were in from June of 44 to December of 45, so that would have been about right.
18 months.
Right. And did you come back to work in the school system, or what did you end up doing?
Yeah, I came back and got a job in High Point in January. And then this girl was a real good friend of mine. Was being sent back. She was married over there, and she wanted a job until her husband could be sent back. So I got her a job at the same place, and then she wasn't there but a few weeks, and he wrote and said, come on back. So she went back to England. I guess he wasn't getting out or something. I forgot the plan.
And so did you stay, how long were you at High Point then teaching?
The rest of that year, from January to June.
And whereabouts after that?
Then let's see, I believe I went back to North Wilkesboro.
And you don't know Dr.
I knew a sheriff. I mean, I went with the son of a sheriff.
Uh-huh.
But I guess that was before you got
there. Bob Martin was a sheriff, was a head for the sheriff here until recently. He was a revenue, though, in Wilkesboro. He was a revenue. He was
not
a sheriff.
So you taught in Wilkesboro the rest of your career?
Well, let's see. Did I?
Until the 50s when you went to Chapel Hill for a couple of years. School.
Yeah, I went.
I
taught at Cary, just outside of Chapel Hill.
What?
2 years. Well, then I taught in near Asheville. But I always come back to North Wilkesboro.
Right. And now you told me that you met this fella in '72.
Yeah, I'm blowing her up.
That's great.
I built a log house up there to retire, I thought, eventually. And it was just a block or two from town. It was right at the near the hospital, between the town and hospital. And we met at a party. That's a partying place up there. You know?
Oh, yes. What's that series of books that woman has come out with about
Mitford,
yeah. Mitford. All about Lord Rock. Well, is that fairly accurate?
Yes, yeah. It is. Uh-huh.
She was a neighbor of ours the last year we lived up there.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Now, Glenn, were you in the service as well?
Oh, yeah.
That's great. You stay in Europe, or where were you stationed?
I was in all services in all ports.
Yeah.
I was in the U.S. Public Health Service, assigned to the Marines, the Public Health Service, the Coast Guard, the Maritime Service, the Training Service, the Kings Point, I mean, which is the West Point North Academy. I was in two of their schools as chief medical officer.
Well, you guys might have met in the luggage shop.
I was in almost 6 years.
That's great. You had the experience of being right there, close to the to folks who were putting their lives on the line every day. Just a couple months ago, we sent a woman into combat for the first time. We had an airline, had a fighter pilot going to Iraq on a bomber mission. What do you think about that? Are there jobs that women should not be doing in the military?
I don't think they need to be, unless it's an absolute necessity. Shortage of men or something. Because it's pretty rough. You'd have to be awfully strong physically and mentally, I think, to go on take a bomber out or a fighter.
Yeah, well, you saw that kind of up front. Do you think of yourself and the other women who got involved during the war? I mean, this was not only you out there traveling the world, but you had a lot of women who were in the workforce doing jobs that were mainly men jobs up to that point. Do you think of that time as sort of a pioneer time for women?
I guess it probably was. For women that were not independent. I was always so independent that it didn't make much difference to me. If I wanted to do it, I did it.
I know that folks who had children in the regular services could display back home a flag in the window with a star on it.
Mm-hmm.
Could Red Cross folks do the same thing? Or?
Did have something in the window, didn't she?
Okay. Because it seems like you're out there doing as much work or more than a lot of those folks who are out there with So your mom got to acknowledge that fact as well.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Trying to go back over where you make sure I've got the English Air Force Base where you were. Where is Boxted? What was it?
Boxted, B-O-X. T-E-D.
Okay. Was that an RAF base before the war?
I don't think so. It was put up in a field.
Oh, so this was just for the war?
Something just for the war.
The other base,
Radon.
Did you have a rank within? You said that if you had been captured, you would have been treated as if you were a captain, for purposes, I guess, of whatever. Did you not have a rank within the Red Cross? Did they not give a rank? No. Everybody was just the same level of that. Mm-hmm. Where were you housed when you were at Boxted? Were you still in a dormitory for women who were working there? Or?
There were only two of us. We were in a Neeson hut.
Just by yourself?
Uh-huh. With the other girl.
Okay. And what about in France? Same situation?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, in Belgium, you had a
Well, in
a
Belgium,
house.
We were transferred around right much. Sometimes I was in a Neeson hut, but sometimes they would put us up in a small hotel near the base, near as possible.
They meaning the Army would put you up, one of the Air Force.
I think the Red Cross did it.
Okay.
The Army. You said one time the house you stayed at in one place in Belgium, such a nice house, the Army had confiscated the house.
Yeah, now then,
the Army or the Red Cross couldn't do that, the Army.
Yeah, that's right.
Military.
In the Moor, we stayed in a very nice house that belonged to a
Nazi sympathizer.
A sympathizer, yeah. They just threw him out.
Right.
And he was staying in town somewhere, don't know where. But
most times she was right on the base with the men. I mean, you know.
Well, because it's important because where you are, most of the folks who get as close to the front as you are, there's not a lot of other women there, whether that's with the nurses or with
that's
the
true.
the Red Cross folks, and it's usually just the nurses and Red Cross people who get as close as you all.
Right.
Most of the other women are not near that close to the front.
No, they were town people or,
right.
People that did the cooking or the cleaning. They were just local people.
When you got to Belgium, did you use that same old donut mix and mix up the donuts and cook it out? Is that part of your job too?
No, we had French help to do that.
Mm-hmm. So you guys were basically...
They were exactly
more. Great.
Yeah, I remember one place we were, wasn't a Nissen hut, it was a building. I guess they'd taken over. And I had this old Frenchman who cleaned the floors there, cleaned up afterwards. And I kept after him all the time, wax the floor. So finally he learned that much English. He laughed and he'd come around and say, wax the floor.
Do you have, when you think about that time, do you have heroes or heroines that come to your mind?
Jack Rose.
They were friends.
A fighter pilot and his wife, when she put on a reception for him at the Red Lion Inn in Colchester. The Red Lion Inn was built in 1300 or something. We went back there on our honeymoon. Saw the same place where she put on a party for the wedding party and so forth. Both of them, their husband and wife, are both friends of hers. A lot of that type of stuff.
What was his name again?
Jack Rose. He was a West Pointer.
He was a pilot in your...
He was a pilot when he was still in the Army. Army pilot. They didn't have the Army Air Force, they called it then.
Right. What did you think of the Roosevelts? Were you at WC when Miss Roosevelt came by?
No. I remember being in France when he died.
Right.
And everyone felt bad over there.
That was so close to the end of that war. I remember my mom talking about, my mom's from Cabarrus County, and she said she went with her mother, who worked at Cannon Mills, and they went out to the train yard as the train came through with his coffin on the back of it. And it's just...
I liked him.
I just had a friend to die here who was on the congressional committee that looked into the Pearl Harbor situation. He told me things that I don't like him as well. Because he says he knew it all the time and provoked him.
Huh.
But I was sure most of everybody was sorry to see him.
Well, they certainly had Japanese had the opportunity to warn, and they chose not to. That was their choice. Their ambassador sitting right there in Washington as it was getting ready to go off. Did you have any thoughts when Roosevelt passed away about who in the world was Harry Truman? Roosevelt had been president for so long.
I remember
saying no, that. No, I don't think I did. It was just pretty much a mystery, I guess.
Yeah.
What was going to happen next?
There are obviously a lot of things that we can cover today, and I appreciate you sending the time to sit down and do this with us. Is there anything about that time over there that we haven't gone over that you want folks to know about?
Been so long ago. You forget.
To me, it's amazing You know, I go through and I ask folks to remember in chronological order. Nobody remembers in chronological order. They remember by what means the most to them.
Yeah.
But it's amazing to me how much folks do remember from 60 years ago. But I think for everybody, it was a time that meant a lot to them. I mean, that was a...
You know, I was thinking about that. The question you said, I remember seeing another officer at Pass Christian when Roosevelt died in Truman. I said, I don't know about Truman. I wonder if he can do it. And this other officer, he's way up the rank. He said, he'll be all right. He'll be all right. He's been on that Truman Commission. But I remember having some doubts.
Was he on the head of that commission that looked into Pearl Harbor?
No, this was the Truman Commission, which had something to do with military.
Right.
And he so, but this other commission that this other man was on the congressional committee that looked into Pearl Harbor. Right. And he says so much of it still has not been published what they found.
Well, I'm sure because. Probably still politically sensitive. Look at the kid gloves treatment we're giving to the Chinese right now, and goodness knows what's going on with that. I'm going to ask you a question we ask everybody, but I know the answer. And the question is, do you think you contributed to the war effort?
Well, I hope I did. A little bit anyway.
About everybody I know did. Yeah. A lot. Yeah. Not just a little bit.
Somebody I was watching on TV the other week and talking about the difference between now and 60 years ago says, you know, back during that war, everybody was patriotic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sure were.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
And everybody wanted to do something.
Yeah.
And the neat thing is that just about everybody found something to do to contribute in some way, either stateside or overseas. And
I took a class before I went in sheet metal work or something like that, but I wasn't good at it, so I decided that's not for
me. So I was going to say, it wasn't going to be Muriel the Riveter.
I wouldn't want to play the Godal because of my roots.
That's good. Well, again, thank you for doing this thing. Now, you said you had some things you wanted to show me for taking back?
Well, did you want to take that uniform?
I would love to. We don't have a Red Cross uniform, and I've talked to several folks, and the Red Cross and the dietitians, frankly, have the best stories because they've been the most places, and they're really exciting to talk to. Well, thank you, transcriber. We're going to turn this off now.
Did you, you know,